Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Take a trip down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear as PSP rides again. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium with your hosts, Mike Norris, Jerry Oates, and Bobby Simmons. Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Take a trip down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear as PSP rides again. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium with your hosts, Mike Norris, Jerry Oates, and Bobby Simmons.
We're so good, we deserve two intros.
Well, I was fixing to say, we enjoy hearing our name. Can we play it a couple more times?
Oh, man, the old switch board system, you could cut it off, but now I guess you just have to ride it out. Well, good evening, everybody. This is Michael Norris, host of Peach State Pandemonium, and along with my two co-hosts, gentlemen Jerry Oates and battling Bobby Simmons. How are you guys doing this evening?
I'm doing good. I'm just glad this storm's going to miss us.
Yes, sir, me too.
Buddy, let me tell you something. I'm sitting in a hotel room in Cherry Hill, New Jersey on Tuesday afternoon, and I go through an earthquake.
Yeah,
I don't ever
want
to go through an earthquake.
I'm telling you.
I mean, these were just little bitty tremors that lasted about 30 seconds apiece. I can imagine being in San Francisco or someplace like that.
But can you imagine?
No, thank you. No, thank you.
Well, I tell you, this storm, we're lucky here. It's going to skirt by us tomorrow about 2 o'clock.
There was a guy on the radio today from the National Weather Service. He said, at the broadest part of the storm, it's 145 miles across. And that thing's churning, man. It's got my wife's middle name. When I heard it was Irene, I knew it was serious. I've lived with an Irene for 25 years. I know that's serious.
Well, I tell you, this thing's going to be dangerous when it goes on up.
Yes, it is.
If it goes the way one of them, I guess they have a dozen models of which way it could go. But there's one of them calling for it to go right down Fifth Avenue in New York City. Can you imagine that?
No, I cannot imagine.
That's just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
They were talking I was listening to the Braves today as I started home. And Don Sutton said in all his years in baseball, he said many times he had been in another city where he had to stay over because of a storm somewhere else that they couldn't get in. He said, they're going to New York. That's where the Braves are playing tomorrow night. He said, this is the first time in his career he's ever been flying into a storm because they have no idea what it's going to do.
Well, I just got an email a little bit ago. They've already canceled our Sunday show in Ashburn, Virginia. They're going to go ahead and try and get in the Friday and Saturday shows, but they canceled the two shows for Sunday. And for us to do that, that's pretty serious. Pretty serious. And that's where Ron is. He's up there, and then he's going somewhere in Maryland, and then he's headed to Louisiana. So he's just following hurricane.
He sure is.
Did you tell me he was on a bridge in D.C. when that thing hit?
When the earthquake hit, I found out it was in Virginia. I naturally called him, and it took me about an hour to get in touch with him because I guess there was no cell service. I kept getting a fast, busy signal, then the phone would go dead. And I finally got his voicemail, left him a voicemail, and he called me right back. He said he was going over somewhere into Maryland to get a permit for the show that he's doing in Glen Burnie, and was on a bridge in D.C. when that earthquake hit.
Jeez.
Well, you've had a fun ride, didn't you?
Man.
Oh, man. And as we were discussing before we went on the air, we just got some bad news, and unfortunately it has been somewhat confirmed that Donna Christenfeld passed away at some point. They found her dead at home, I guess, today at some point. It's real sad news. She was a nice lady. I liked Donna a lot. I got to spend some time around her whenever she would come to Mobile. And did she just get the Pioneer Award this year, Bobby?
This year? I can't remember. I found it makes it all the more special to me now. I found a picture of me refereeing a match with her on Atlanta TV, and I mailed it to her and asked her to sign it for me. And she signed it and sent it back to me. So it means a lot to me. But I just, good lady, good lady.
Was a good person. But I don't know if she had moved back to Pittsburgh, was living up there. Bobby, you mentioned she had a brother.
Her brother, evidently, what I heard was her brother was trying to call home to check on her. She'd been sick, evidently. She had COPD and couldn't get an answer, and he sent one of the neighbors over to check on her, and that's when they found her.
Wow.
But, yeah, she was right outside of Pittsburgh up there somewhere in Pennsylvania. That's where she was living.
And that's where she was from originally before she got into the wrestling business. Wow.
That's sad.
You know, we talk about ourselves as we lose people, you know, our generation and the history of our business. You know, you think about it. Moolah's gone. Tony's gone. There's a lot of folks. There's some of those ladies that have just disappeared that want absolutely nothing to do with the business. You don't know where they are or what they're doing. They don't want anything to do with it at all. So that generation's kind of going away too.
Yeah, that's true. Well, on a lighter note, we're going to have a very special guest this evening. Actually, we're going to have two. Somewhere along the line, Vic's going to join us, but... he put me in contact with somebody that is one of the legendary names and legendary characters in the wrestling business, and that's the original Fabulous one, Jackie Fargo. So he's going to join us here. I'm going to get him on the line here in just a few minutes. But anything else exciting happening in you guys' world?
I just want to mention the folks that are listening to remember Bill Dromo and his wife. Karen, his wife, had a heart catheterization on Tuesday, and that was successful. They're treating her with medication. She's fine, but Bill was hospitalized on Wednesday with Wednesday or Thursday. I'm losing. No, today's Thursday, so it was Wednesday with pneumonia. And, of course, Bill's health with the Parkinson's disease and so forth, he's not as strong as he once was. And as I talked to his wife yesterday, she said that his heart wasn't as strong as it used to be, and I said, "Well, I said at least he's got one." I said, "As hard as he hit me all them years, I wasn't real sure he had a heart." So,
you had said earlier that they were treating him, putting him on steroids, and that's just a scary thought. Bill Dromo on steroids.
Yes, he's
it is, isn't it?
Hulk Dromo. They're trying to build his strength up a little bit and his appetite and, you know, helping him fight off this pneumonia and stuff. So just said good prayer for them. Keep them in good thoughts, and I'm sure they will appreciate it.
And you mentioned that made me reminded me of something else. Jack Welch, Welch, who's known in the business. He evidently has been released from the hospital, but they're saying his heart's only working at 20% of what it should be. So keep that family in mind as well. After losing his dad Lester, just a couple of years ago, and his cousin Bobby Fields just last week, family's been through a lot in the last couple of years. The Welch name is synonymous with wrestling, especially in the Southeast in the 50s and 60s and into the 70s and early 80s.
I may have told y'all this story. I don't know if I did or not. You can stop me if I did. But I was very honored. Jack and Roy Lee called me when Lester passed away and asked me if I would come down and conduct his memorial service. And I went down there. I got down there the night before and went to the funeral home and visited for a while, and I got up the next morning and was over to chapel there in Pensacola. And every funeral director there was probably in their late 60s, early 70s. I mean, they were some elderly gentlemen running this funeral home, and it was a family-run business. And we were sitting there, and they had took the family in, and they were playing some song, and the funeral director told me, he said, as soon as this song ends, he said, we'll escort you in. And I said, well, okay. And the guy asked me, he said, did you know this guy was a wrestler? And I said, well, yes, sir, I did. And he said, well, how did you know about that? And I explained to him I said, I actually worked for him when I was a kid, you know, when he came to Atlanta before Ann started, and when he was in the Atlanta office there for a couple of weeks, I actually, you know, worked around him a little. And I said, but I spent most of my time in Atlanta. Well, this guy told me, he goes, you know, our big hero down here was Bob Kelly. And I said, well, you see that guy sitting right there? He said, yeah. I said, that's Bob Kelly. He said, really? I said, yeah. He said, well, what about Lee Fields? I said, well, Lee passed away. I said, but that's his brother Bobby right there. And I said, that's Don's wife right there next to him and his wife and so forth. Listen, he got about 6 or 8 of them 70-year-old funeral directors over, and I thought they was going to get autographs. They was all
wonderful.
Twitter because all these guys was in their funeral home. And I thought, you know something? That says a lot for those guys of how over they were in their day.
Absolutely. But are you telling me Jackie Welch is having heart problems?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
See, I always call him Jackie.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're saying,
well, Mike's right. I read the same thing. They're saying his heart's only functioning at 20% of what it's supposed to.
Well, where is he living, guys?
Pensacola. Or somewhere around Pensacola. Him and Roy Lee's both there, and Lester's widow, Lucille, lives there as well.
Well, what's wrong with Jackie?
I don't know.
I haven't heard. I don't think that they ever figured it out. They're just practically experimenting on him, I guess.
Yeah, what I read said they were sending him home and they were going to just try to treat him with medication.
What's him and Roy Lee been doing all these years?
Roy Lee's got, well, now Jackie's a minister there. I don't know. I don't know if he was pastor in a church or an associate pastor, but he's been in a ministry for years. And Roy Lee was running some kind of business down there.
Didn't one of them take over Lester's business, the trailer business, or whatever it was he had?
Possibly.
He had a business that built trailers. I don't know if they were horse trailers or anything specialized, or if they were just plain old trailers, but he had that business for years, I think. One or both of the sons actually were involved with it at one point.
Yeah, could be.
Right. Well, let me try and get the fabulous one on the phone with us. Let's see if I can get him to strut and see if we can tell it over the phone that he's actually doing it.
Talk about a guy that was over. Man, he was like two was here in Tennessee. You put his name on the card. You were going to draw a house.
Still, I bet if you put his name on the card right now, he probably would.
Hello?
Is this the fabulous one?
You got the fabulous one, often imitated but never duplicated.
Hey, Jackie, this is Michael Norris, Jerry Oates, and Bobby Simmons. How you doing this evening?
Doing great. Hope y'all are. Where y'all at? What city?
I'm in Greensboro, North Carolina for the time being. And,
okay.
Bobby's in Atlanta, and Jerry's in Savannah.
Okay. Anything you guys want to know, as long as it's dirty, let me know, and I can shoot it. Nothing clean in this house.
Jackie, this is Bobby Simmons. I never had a chance to meet you, but two of the best friends I ever had in the world both told me what a pleasure it was to work with you, and unfortunately they're both gone now. But Rocket Monroe used to speak very highly of you.
Yeah.
And also Luke Graham. Luke Graham said he had the most fun he ever had in the business working with you,
especially when they would bring
Rough House in.
Yep, me and Luke had a good time. He was a good fella.
Yeah, he was.
Well, is Rocky dead?
Rocket passed away about a year ago.
I'll be darned. I thought I'd heard he had, you know. I didn't couldn't remember whether it did or not. How are you guys doing with this show?
It's done over the internet. I have a switchboard program on my computer that allows us to all be on at the same time. And we better talk now, because once Dick Steinborn calls in, we
oh my God, have mercy! If once he gets on there, we're done. We are finished, buddy. When Steinborn gets on there and starts going 800 miles an hour, we can forget it. We better say what we're going to say right now. Good fellow, though. Do what?
How did you get started in the business? Did you grow up a fan?
I grew up electric fan. Yeah, I grew up electric fan, then became... I grew up, I was an amateur wrestler here in Kannapolis, North Carolina, and went to Goldsboro to wrestle amateur, and I don't know if you guys remember the old-timer Johnny Long, not the younger Johnny Long, and he said, "Hey, kid," when it was over, he said, "Where are you going?" I said, "Back to China Grove." And he said, "Would you like to be a professional wrestler?" I said, "I ain't never seen a wrestling match before." And he said, "Well, here, come to Columbia, South Carolina." And I went down there, and that's how I got started. Johnny Long. Him and Mula and him was together, you know.
Right.
Who else? Don Martin. You remember Don Martin?
I remember the name, yeah.
Yeah.
He worked in and out of Mobile back in the early
50s. Yeah, and that's how I got started. Then I went from there, I went to Florida. And man, oh man, I said, "Boy, oh boy, I'm doing good." And I went to Florida, and Cowboy Rutter, I stayed there about 5 weeks and got ready to come back home. And what's the masked man's name from Cuba?
Oh, Godoy. Pedro Godoy.
Pedro Godoy, that's him. He said, "Hey, kid, where are you going?" I said, "I'm going home." He said, "How would you like to go to Cuba?" I said, "Cuba? Where in the hell is Cuba?" And now, this was before Castro. And he said, "I'll give you $200 a week and all expenses." I said, "Shoot, man, let's go." So I went to Cuba, and after 4 weeks, he said, "Would you like to stay 5 or 6 more weeks?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "I'll give you $250 a week and all expenses." Well, that was a lot of money back then. And about the third day, I got a letter. "Dear old Uncle Sam wants me in the United States Army." So I had to leave there and go in the Army. And then when I got out, I started back again, you know, and just started. West Virginia is where I got my big start, you know. Toots Mont, I was in West Virginia, and I was going to Amarillo, and Toots, I told Toots, I said, Toots was the promoter there, and he said, "Gosh darn, kid, I got plans for you, New York, Washington, all around." I said, "Well, Toots, I done got myself booked." He said, "You mind if I call and unbook you?" I said, "No." So he did, and I went into, flew in from Charleston, West Virginia, Ace Freeman?
Yeah.
Is that his name?
Yeah.
Ace Freeman, yeah. He was the promoter there, and I fly from Charleston into Washington, worked there for Vince McMahon Sr., and on the next 2 days, I'd fly into New York and work the TV there and then back to West Virginia, you know. So, and I really got over big in them towns, you know, Wildman, Fargo. Then Don and I teamed up, and we had a hell of a run. I'm sure you know that, though. But we had a great run, and we was damn good workers, you know. I mean, to be honest with you, we was good workers. I hate to pat myself on the back. Nobody else will, so I had to do it myself. And me and Don just, we just got over like $1 million. And just everybody was wanting us, and we wind up in Tennessee and had a heck of a run there. And Jack Pfeffer, you know, was our manager.
Right.
And when Jack Pfeffer called, he called Fred Cola in Chicago. He didn't say, when are we coming? He says, mine boys will be in your town on so-and-so date, and they will get this much money, and you will pay the transportation. Well, you know, I don't know why everybody was scared of Jack Pfeffer, but they was. And so, you know, he'd just call, like Jim Crockett, he'd call him, say, my boys will be there on such and such a date. And tell you a little funny story about Jack Pfeffer. Of course, there's a million stories about him. We're going from Nashville, Tennessee to Jackson, which is about 150 miles, and we're headed down that way, and me and Don and Pfeffer, and had a flat tire. And Pfeffer screaming, son of a bitch, why don't you fix it before we leave? I said, what the hell are you talking about, Jack? How can you fix a flat tire before you leave? Never mind, just fix the damn thing. And directly I heard, he called me Jakey. I heard a little noise say, Jakey, Jakey. I said, what the hell is that, Don? And I heard again. He said, that's Pfeffer. He's down about a 40-foot cliff. He fell off. He fell off, and we laughed our ass off. What the hell are you doing? You let me pull. I said, I didn't let you, Jack. You fell yourself. Oh, man, what a time we had with that guy. Boy, now listen, he'd put you on a show, buddy. I mean, we had a lot of fun, and he was a powerful man in the wrestling business. I don't know why or how, but he was, when Jack fell, like I said, I couldn't believe it. You remember when Sam Martinez was getting over so big? Well, he went to New York, and me and him, and I worked with Bruno, and he had never went off his feet. And Jack conned him into letting me drop kick him off of the feet and over the top rope and all that jazz, you know. So, yeah, Jack Pfeffer was a good man for me. I liked Jack. He was a lot of people didn't like him, but he was a good man. Where is Steinborn?
I hadn't put him on yet because I was.
Well, good, because once you do, we're gone for.
Hang on, let me get him on with it.
I'm glad you guys are doing good. You let me tell you a story about Steinborn. You want to hear a good story? We're going to from Nashville to Birmingham, Alabama. And so on the way down there, we get about halfway, about 40 miles out of Nashville, and we see some guy there, and I said, hey, pal, how you doing? He said, doing fine, thank you. I said, where are you going? He said, I'm going home. I said, you want to go to Birmingham, Alabama with us? No. I said, if you do, we'll have a little sex on the way, me and you and Dickie. He said, no, I don't believe I'll go. I said, well, you better get your ass in this car. And I went out like I was going to get him, and he took off. Oh, God, have mercy. What fun I've had in this wrestling business and made a living doing it. That's the sad part about it.
Yeah, this is Dick here. What I remember about that, Jackie, is he really didn't talk to you when you looked through the room. I was driving, and here I'm down from New York, and what the hell am I doing in Tennessee with this idiot sitting next to me? And he's asking this guy, how did he get to town? And all of a sudden, what he said, when you asked him that question, he said, uh-uh. And then he said, we'll have sex. He went, uh-uh. That's what he said. It shocked me when you said, want to go with us?
Go ahead, Dickie. Tell him what he really said.
That really cute.
Oh, no, you can't do that. Oh, man, old life. Oh, boy. he wouldn't go with us, so he took off. He said, no, I'm going home. And he took off. Steinboy, what are you doing up this late for an old man?
Laughing at you guys.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. Dickie pulled a rib on me. He says he didn't do it, but I got bugs in my drawer some way in Baltimore, Maryland. And he swore he didn't do it, but he's the only one around that couldn't. Him and Buddy Rogers. I think Dickie did it, but he said he didn't. Take over a little bit, Dickie. I got to get me a beer.
You know, I'll tell you something. I was from New York. I come down to the South, and Donnie Fargo changed me a little bit with his little Buddy Rogers routine. I met Jackie in Tennessee. This is ridiculous. And when he came to Georgia, we wrestled in Hogansville one night. And he and Donnie leave the arena, and they go back to Atlanta, and they have to come to a little junction.
Oh, the shortcut. Uh-huh. Okay.
It's a right turn.
I got
turn.
You. Go ahead. Doesn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
It goes all the way down 2 miles, and then you have to make a left. But it's not a left. It's back almost neck and neck where you just came from. It's like an arrow, or like an A. You know where the middle part is. Well, that's where the shortcut was. You, Donnie. To cut,
we took
left.
The shortcut, remember?
Every time I think of it. And I got Gunkel in the call room. He owns the territory. And all of a sudden, we come up, and here's two naked girls on the highway. I mean, there's a small road there. I know they're girls because the hair is all in front of their face and their arms across the bust. And I knew they were girls because these two guys had tucked themselves between their legs, and there they were.
Didn't have much to tuck, but we tucked what little I had.
Keckle says, I swear, he said, Jesus Christ, I looked up and said, yeah, our prayers are answered. I knew who it was. And he says, what's happening? Like, we kept going, and we got on Highway 20. I says, just think, you're the promoter, and you're promoting all this. I mean, this is crazy.
I'm telling you the damn truth. We did the same thing coming out of Birmingham, and in Huntsville, there was a big steep hill down on the interstate. So we're going down the hill, and me and Don said, we've been drinking a few brewskis, and said, let's have a little fun. We back the car up in the woods there and jump out and get all nuded it up a little bit, and that long blonde hair flowing and plopping in the wind. And like he says, we sort of tuckered ourselves a little bit, and you could hear them trucks going down that hill, and Liz going, wee! You ought to hear him throwing them damn brakes on, trying to stop, pick up them two blonde-headed women. That was funny as heck. I mean, buddy, they were, them air horns were blowing. Wee! Oh, boy, oh, boy. But we, I finally did get to just about within 30 feet of one time, and I said, hey, pal, how about a ride? God almighty, if you'd thought that damn truck was a dragster getting out of there or something, he'd seen it was a man. He said, oh, my God, he took off. Oh, what fun we had in this business. I wouldn't trade it for a pair of blue-nosed mules. I'm telling you the doggone truth, but I've had some fun. Ricky Starr, I know you guys all remember him.
Oh, yeah.
I can't tell you that story, though. That's too brutal.
Jackie, who'd you put in the trunk?
The what, Dickie?
Who'd you put in the trunk of the car?
Oh. Len Rossi and I left Nashville, Tennessee, going to Chattanooga. So on the way down there, I said, Len, let's have a little fun. Well, Len was sort of a laid-back type. He didn't want to, you know. And me, I was just wanting to have fun all the time. And so Len, on the way down there, I said, look, let's have a little fun. Here's what we'll do. You get in the trunk of the car, and I'll pull in a little old country gas station, get a couple dollars worth of gas, and we'll go from there. So we pulled in. I said, "Pal, give me a couple of dollars worth of gas. There's three of it to hold it." And so I'm watching him through the window in there, and I see him jump back. I said, "What?" And Lynn's going, he says, "Let me out." That guy jumped back. He said, "I can't do that." He said, "Come on, man. I've been in here all day." And said, "I ain't had nothing to eat and no water." He said, "No, I can't do that." He said, "Please let me out." And started crying. I said, "Shut up, boy." So I paid him. We took off about 6 to 8, 10 miles down the road. And here's a highway patrol pulls us over. And he says, "Hey," says, "you guys got somebody in the trunk?" I said, "Somebody in the trunk? They couldn't nobody ride back there. Hell, they'd smother." He said, "Well, some guy said y'all had somebody in the trunk." I said, "No, no, no, sir. We don't do stuff like that. That's no, no." He said, "Do you mind if I look?" I said, "No." So he opens, says, "No," says, "You're clear. Go ahead." That guy, I guess he dreamed all night about Lynn knocking on and wanting something to eat. That was funny as heck. That was funny.
Jackie, I just want to know who started the thing with the toothbrush and the cigar? Was that you?
Oh, Lord. Oh, my God. That was me. I'm sorry. I hate to take the credit for that one, but that was me. I never will forget this little Frenchman from Canada. He says, he spoke with that, and he's a little midget, and he said, "Oh, yeah, no offense to the midgets, no offense to the small people, but," he says, "you know, I've lost my toothbrush." And so I'm taking a shower and boom, boom, and then just washing off, and Don's laughing and guys are laughing. I said, "What the hell?" And I turned around, "Jackie, what the hell are you doing? You got my toothbrush." He grabbed it out of my keister and started brushing his teeth with it. That's a true story. True story. He says, "You got my toothbrush." Steinborn, where'd you hear all these my stories from?
I just carried them with me all over the business, that's all.
I got up one I could tell, but I better not go this far. Well, I'll make it short. We picked up me, Don, Fields, and Jesse James, I believe. I'm not for sure. Coming from Birmingham, going to Nashville. And so we see the hitchhiker. I said, "Oh, boy." We pulled over and said, "Hey, pal, come on." He was African-American, so I said, "Come on, get in the car and ride." But, "Oh, thank you, thank you." So we get in the car, and we get in the argument, and two cars are following us behind us, you know. And so I said, "Well," I got in an argument with, I believe, I forget who it was. But anyway, I said, "Shut the hell up. You make me." We got out of the car, and I had a little old 25 automatic. I went, pow, pow, pow. "Get in the car, boys. We're leaving." And that guy turned absolutely white. So we get on down the road, and next thing you know, I had to relieve myself, and I didn't have no hand. I had a beer in one hand, a pistol in the other, so I had to have some way to relieve myself. And how do you think I did it? He had to hold it for me and relieve me.
Who had the bigger pistol?
Oh, the guy that we picked up, you know, so... So we go on down, and we shoot 4 or 5 guys, and I said, "Now listen to me, pal. You better not tell nobody." He said, "No, sir. I caught a transfer truck, and I'm blah, blah, and this." Made him rehearse. I said, "Don't you ever tell nobody this." He said, "I promise you." We get into Nashville, and about 2 miles, 3 out of the city limits. I said, "I'm going to give you a chance." He didn't get, "Please, sir, don't shoot me. Please don't." And I said, "I'm going to count to 10. 1, 2, and he started running, and he dove under a bill, and I heard his head go boom, 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 hit them 2x4s. So we go down to the joint that we hang out and drink some beer and all that jazz, and by that time here come about 5 or 6 cops, and he looks over and he says, "God darn Fargo, I might have known it was you." I said, "It wasn't me, I didn't do nothing." He said, "We got a guy up there that's done turned different colors," and he said, "You was the Al Capone gang." I said, "I didn't do a thing." I said, "Please, please, please, Sergeant, take me up there and let me." He said, "Man, I can't. That guy liable to die on me." He said, "What for that?" I said, "I'd love to take you up there and let you grab at him and let him see what you do." But that was a funny sight. Jump in, Soundborn.
I'm laughing too hard.
These are all true stories. Donnie and I are coming from Chattanooga to Knoxville to Chattanooga. And so this is about 3, 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the afternoon. And I said, "Don, let's have a little fun. Take these teeth and put them in and pull all your clothes off and knock on the window of the old restaurant there and we'll take." He said, "Oh, yeah." So we do that 2 or 3 times, and we're laughing. And I said, he said, "Now let me do it." I said, "Well, let's you do it one more time, knock on the window and all, you know, okay." So we go, and Donnie knocks on, and I said, "Now really knock hard this time and get them all to see you." He said, "Okay," and he's knocking, and by that time, here he comes flying. He grabs that door handle. He says, "Don't do it, Fargo. Jackie, don't do it. Let me in. Let me in this car." I said, "Bye, Donnie. I'll see you later." And we're going down the road, and I see him dive head first into the ditches over there trying to cover up. He didn't have no clothes on. Oh, Lord, Lord, what a business we're in. We're in the greatest business. We're in the greatest business that ever was. I mean, listen, anybody that didn't enjoy being in this business, and any idiot that knocks my business, I hate them. Hope they die. And, you know, they haven't been through what I've been through with, broke nose, broke ribs, and busted eyeballs, and wrestled for $7 a night, and all that jazz. But anyway, it's been just a great business, and I still enjoy it.
Jackie, did you have some dealings with Gorgeous George in the trailer park?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. George and I were... Yeah, every morning, you know, I'm a sleeper. I like to sleep in till 11, 12 o'clock. He's up in my trailer banging on the door at 7 o'clock in the morning. Let's play. I said, "George, I don't want to play cards at 7 o'clock in the morning." "Oh, come on, come on, come on." So we just, you know, every morning, same stuff. So I just finally told him, I said, "George, you're my friend and I like you, but I can't get up at 7 o'clock. Don't ask me no more." It didn't stop him. He was there the next morning at 7 o'clock. So what we did, we took a purple paint and painted his car purple so he'd have a purple violet. He raised holy hell. "You going to pay for that?" I said, "No, we didn't do it, George." That was funny. That was funny.
Was he Gorgeous George then or just George Wagner?
Gorgeous George Wagner. He was...
When he was in the trailer park, was he Gorgeous George at that time?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was Gorgeous George at that time. He had Sherry with him then, the original Sherry. No, it wasn't the original. Yeah, he was Gorgeous George then. Him and Jesse James was good friends. They every time, I think they tried to cheat me. Him and Jesse was partners, I think, against me, but they didn't know I had a loaded deck on them, so I was doing the cheating. They thought they were getting something on me, and I was getting it on them.
I think they were cousins.
They were, yeah, they were, Dickie. How'd you know that?
Well, the publicity that used to come down there, you know, when I was starting the business in Florida, Jesse was there, and Frank, his brother, he was there. Another trip, you know, and he dated Terry Majors and married her. So I was in that little area right there, and that was we all heard that. That was it. He was so proud of his cousin.
Dickie, you're about, what, 40 years old. You got more stories you got more stories than anybody in this business, and everybody wants to hear them. So let's let out with a few of yours. I'm run out of breath.
Hey, Dick. Well,
there's another rib that you... Go ahead, Bobby.
I was going to say, you're talking about Jesse James, 1972, into 72 when I first started refereeing. Bill McMahon was another referee here in Georgia. And was in the dressing room one night, and Bill's telling Jesse, he says, you know, he said, when I was a little boy, he said, my daddy took me to the matches, and he said, I got a program that you signed for me. And Jesse told him, he said, well, he said, you know, why don't you bring it tomorrow night and let me see it? He said, I'll sign another piece of paper. He said, let's see how much my signature has changed over the years. So the next night we went somewhere, I don't know where we were, but George Grant had heard all of this conversation. So George gets McMahon before he goes in the building. He said, look, he said, go in there and tell him. He says, tell him that you couldn't find the one that you had when you was a little boy, but you found one that he signed for your granddaddy when he was a little boy.
That was my next story. You stole it. You stole my story.
That reminds me of me and Steinborn.
Steinborn, I was sitting on them one of them little planks getting a haircut, and Steinborn was over getting a shave. I said, how you doing, Mr. Steinborn? Y'all didn't get that one. Okay. Dickie, tell us some stories.
I'm out of stories right now.
No, you're not. You don't ever run out of stories, buddy.
Wait a minute, Jackie. There's another one that you did on that Donnie told me one time about the one that you guys pulled on Gorgeous George, etc. It had something to do with a rib that you guys pulled on him involving some wigs. Do you remember that?
I vaguely remember that, and I can't. Exactly. I don't remember it all the way, so I better not try to tell it if I don't remember, you know. But we did so damn much. Me and Don Fargo did so much stuff. We would go to the arena, and the guys on the first match wouldn't leave. They would wait till we left and follow us to see what we were going to do. And we didn't let them down either, brother. We put on a show for them. We put on a show.
Jackie, let me tell you this one right now. You and Donnie were doing so good in Nashville against Rusty and what was his partner's name?
Tex Riley.
The house was full. And you guys wanted to have some fun. And what I was told was as you got in the ring and Donnie was on the apron, you pointed to your nose and came out real like a chicken, I mean like a duck, all the way back to you underneath your nose and pointed at Rusty, because the publicity was saying he's got a big nose. And Jackie reached back and he grabbed Donnie by the nose, who's standing on the apron, and he flying there into the ring with his nose.
That's a true story. He had the nose about the size of a banana now. You got to remember that. And I grabbed Donnie by the nose, or he grabbed me and billed him across the ring by the nose. That's most funny, boy. That wasn't funny to Rossi. Ah, you son of a bitch, that ain't funny. I said, we thought it was, Lynn. Oh, boy. Dickie, please take over. I got to go relieve myself.
Well, go ahead. You have our permission.
Dickie, did you feel that earthquake?
Over here? Yeah. I was sitting in the hospital. I'd have a knee x-ray. I'm sitting in the hospital on the first floor, and it's four floors. It's only two blocks away from where I live. And this guy's sitting next to me. He's reading something, and this place shook. And all right, in your mind, you think, well, what the heck is it? And then you think, well, they got a basement, and the garbage truck is stuck against the building. He's trying to move the tire. And then the woman on the right-hand side, about four or five women, she says, oh, that's probably a helicopter landing on the street. It made sense. Everybody in that office knew it was a helicopter that came down on the top of the building and took some patient off. And he went to, we all got downstairs out of the elevator, and he said, yeah, it was an earthquake. I said, what? I mean, really? It's like getting stuck in an elevator. Oh, the woman was right.
How much time we got to go, guys? I'm running out of stories.
Well, sit back and listen to some.
All right, let me listen to some, okay?
Yeah, something will pop in your head. Just jump in.
Hey, Jackie, this is Jerry Oates. I don't know if we ever met or not. I think I met you in Memphis one night when I was up there. But anyhow, my brother and I, Ted, were in Charlotte when Sonny was there.
Yeah, he was a referee, yeah.
Yeah, we had the most fun of any two brothers could ever have with your brother.
He was a great guy.
Ted and I mean, we loved traveling with him. We made a lot of miles together up there with him.
I've heard him talk about you. Oh, okay, yeah. Thanks for reminding me. Yeah, okay, go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean
we was talking about him today, and we just loved your brother to death. I mean, he was. We had so much fun with Sonny.
He was a good guy. Everybody wanted to travel with him, wouldn't charge him no trash just to get him to travel with him.
Oh, listen, every time my brother would drive, it'd be when we'd have the short trips up there, and every time Sonny and I would drive, it'd be the long run. And Sonny would raise saying, he'd tell my brother, I don't know how you gypped me and your brother like that. And they would sit up all night and play cribbage. I mean,
That's all night long.
Did he ever tell you
it was Iggy? Oh, you're Iggy.
Yeah.
That was his flavor saying, you're Iggy.
Yeah, I just, Ted and I loved him to death.
I remember him talking about you, Jerry. Yeah, I really do.
Well, I'm glad.
You'd think you met everybody in this business. I've traveled all over the world, been here and there and everywhere, and a lot of guys I didn't get the pleasure to meet, you know.
I know, and it's sometimes my brother and I rack our brains. Did we meet that guy somewhere? But I'm pretty sure I met you. That's when we went up to
Winnipeg with Ann.
Yeah. But you was with us because you picked us up at the airport.
Yeah.
Was Jackie there that night?
I can't remember.
Where was this?
It was in
1985.
What city was it?
Memphis.
Oh, okay. I was there, I'm sure, yeah.
I'm sure you were there that night.
Yeah.
We had come up from Atlanta, a bunch of us, and yeah, I'm pretty sure you were there.
Were y'all working, or was it a convention?
No, we were wrestling up there.
I got you.
We wrestled Ernesto Jr. and somebody. I forgot who it was.
Let me ask you, what would you trade? Would you take anything for the experience you've had in professional wrestling?
Me? No.
Yeah.
And I'd do it again. Dickie was my brother-in-law.
Oh, okay.
So you can imagine.
I got more education out of 3 months of professional wrestling than I did the whole time in my 3 years at school.
I'm telling you. I had the pleasure of, you know, having Dickie for a brother-in-law, and he trained my brother and I, and of course I got to meet his dad, who I'm still in awe of today. His dad, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever met Dickie's daddy or not, but
yes, I did. I had the pleasure in Orlando. Sure
right,
did.
Right. And
Dick Steinborn, not because he's there, but he's a great guy.
He is.
Everybody likes Dickie.
And his dad was good to me when I was down there, and you know, Dickie would take me to the to their gym, and you know, I learned to wrestle there in their gym, and I mean, I'm like you. I wouldn't take anything for it. Nothing.
No, that's good. No, I wouldn't either. You know what I like about Dickie? Nothing. Not one damn thing.
I knew it.
Oh, I didn't know you were still there, Dickie.
That's one.
Well, speaking of Sonny, Jackie, I've got a picture of back when he was Sonny Boy, and he was the valet for you and Donnie when you guys came into Mobile in probably 57, 58.
Oh,
I got a
man.
Photo of three of you in the ring together from Lance Stadium. You
yep.
guys had a sellout match against Bobby and Don Field.
Yep, I remember that.
Yeah, I don't know
sure
if you've
did.
Heard or not, but Bobby passed away last Saturday.
Yeah, I think Dickie told me, didn't you, Dickie?
Yeah.
Yeah, Dickie told me. What's happened to these guys? He was a young bun. Gosh darn. I don't know what's happening to these guys leaving us like this. I mean,
you got that notice.
Boy, oh boy. I'm just, you know, just like when Dickie told me about Don Fields, it just put me in shock, you know. And I'm in shock every time I hear about it, because it just absolutely, I said, no way, it can't be, you know. So it just really, you know, you love these guys. They're like a family to us, you know, like, you know, you just can't help yourself. They're a family. So you in shock when you hear they're dead, you know. Oh, I went half of a Budweiser.
You talking about the education. The first trip I ever made in the business was with Charlie Smith.
Oh, my God.
And he was telling me all this stuff, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, I said, you know, I'm 16 years old, and I'm thinking, people don't live like this. Man, he's ribbing me. This don't really happen. And we checked in the town motel in Savannah, Georgia, and after 15 minutes, I realized maybe people do live like this.
Yeah, we're in a business all our own that nobody, I don't think anybody would trade what they've learned in our business. I know I wouldn't, and it's, man, I've met some of the nicest human beings in the world. You don't meet our kind of people on the outside of the wrestling business. You just don't meet them. They're not there, you know.
They're not there.
All they want to do is insult you or tell you to.
No, yeah.
You know, Dickie tells me I'm old-fashioned. I want to ask you guys. I resent a son of a bitch telling me that my business is not real. Do you guys resent that?
Yep.
I still do.
I do. I want to fight them. I want to hit them in the nose. Dickie laughs at me. But I resent it. Don't I, Dickie?
Yeah. You've got to reverse it. Let me tell you something. Psychologically, you've got to reverse it. When we were in the business, we were in control. We were in that ring in a little squared circle with thousands of people in big coliseums, and all of a sudden television did. Now we're in control of the television. Now they have exposed everything on the television, and we're back down in the ring, and they're not hollering at us anymore. They're saying, you're an idiot. You're an idiot. Everybody else believes what we're saying. They proved it. There's Hulk Hogan on TV sticking his tongue out. He's got a blade on laying in his tongue with the paper, and says, this is the blade.
Well, who could he beat? Who the hell could he ever beat? He couldn't beat nobody. Excuse me, I'm sorry. I stopped.
We're
all thinking it anyway, Jackie.
Yeah.
Well, it's a trend, you know. Our era is over. Now they got these new high flyers. They're acrobats. They dive over the rope, triple somersault, and the guy catches them on the ground. And you got, and Jerry Lawler got on there, and he says, well, you're right. It's nothing but a soap opera. Wait a minute. When we were in the business, the soap opera was contained in the ring, with wrestling maneuvers, holes, and psychology, and we had good commentators who said, there's a nice, and he even had a wrestler sitting next to him describing, we lost that. And all of a sudden, we lost the bookers. And all of a sudden, we've got new writers and script writers. Pretty soon, there was less wrestling and more talking. Now, when you turn on a wrestling match, they're on the microphone for 20 minutes. And we're going to sit back later on and say, it'll never happen. Well, these people, 40 years from now, they're going to be complaining also. Because 40 years from now, they're going to be doing something idiotic.
Dickie, have you ever heard this one? There he sat on the floor, looked out, and there laid Tanglefoot on the floor. You remember that?
Say that again.
There he sat, all brokenhearted, paid a nickel to do something, and turn. What I'm getting to is, you know it better than I do, Babe Sharkey in Baltimore. Let out a remember we called him Tanglefoot?
Tanglefoot, yes.
And you're the one that started that, said, turned around, and there laid Tanglefoot on the floor. But anyway, back to the, I still resent any SOB that knocks my business, and anybody that don't think I'm tough enough to get in the ring with them, let them try me. I'm not talking to you guys now, I'm talking to them. No, I do. I resent it very much, you know, but, you know, you can't. I'm in Nashville, sitting in a little bar there, a little restaurant, and guys tell me, you're one of the fight, yeah. And he said, well, that wrestling's all fake. I said, oh, just like your wife's boobies? Well, he got mad. I said, oh, you want to get mad, huh? And I knocked his ass through the window. And police came down and arrested me and all that, and I told him what happened. He said, well, you should have hit him a little harder. But, you know, it's all right if they insult you, but you can't insult them.
There you go.
And I resent the hell out of it.
Dickie
says I'm wrong. Dick Steinborn says I'm wrong. And maybe I am, but I still think I'm right.
All right, hold on a minute. Hold on a minute. Talking about psychology now, it's bothering you. That's the whole problem there. It's tearing you apart. Now, wait a minute. Let me give you a little for instance. If you go to a Christian church and everybody believes, and you sit down there on the first row and say, I don't believe, and you scream in Allah, and they have to haul you out of that church, okay? Now, hold it. Let's change it around. All those people in the church are smart, and you're the preacher, and you're trying to convince them that it's real. It's over. Now, if you want to live in that fast, that's a negative way of looking. I look at it as a positive way of saying, yes, I'm a legend. I was good at what I did. I had convinced the people. I knew how to wrestle. All I had to do is shoot if I wanted to. If I wanted to be stiff, I could be stiff. And I wanted to move. I wanted to go all over the world and make money. And thank you very much. I hope I entertained you well. That's the positive way. That's the
Steinborn,
way.
What? I'm a lot younger than you are, but I'll whoop your ass any ring you want.
Jackie, you were talking about the people we meet and the nice people that we meet in this business. I have been a pastor for the last 20 years here in Atlanta, and I go to the reunions every year, and I still go every once in a while. I'll go to a match somewhere that somebody's putting on, and I had a lady in my church come up to me, and she was very serious, and she looked at me and she goes, I can't believe that you go to that reunion and sit down there and hear and listen to all those lies that are told down there, and you enjoy that. And I told her, I said, I'm going to tell you something. I said, first of all, I said, we wish they were lies. I said, because we realize how lucky we are to be alive, some of the crazy stuff we did. I said, but I'll tell you this, and I meant this from the bottom of my heart. I said, sometimes there is more love in a dressing room, at a wrestling match, or in a reunion than there is in my church on Sunday morning sometimes.
Amen to that.
We had to get away from this crazy business a little bit to realize how much we really did care about each other. And I'll tell you something, you can say what you want. We had to love each other, or we wouldn't have entrusted them with our bodies.
You're exactly right, bro. Now, I wouldn't want to be starting off just today. I can't stand
no,
to watch that bull crap they're putting on today. It makes me sick to my stomach. I want to throw up all over Vince McMahon and his wife, too. Man, what the hell? Who do they think they are? She's getting up there and running for something, I don't know, toilet keeper, I think. And she's telling, oh, well, you know, we put on a show, but we know who's going to win. I said, well, that husdy. Who does she think she is? She ain't never had a damn pair of tights on or her husband either one.
When she was running for the Senate up there, my wife saw her on an interview, and she was talking about how she had you know, developed the WWE and how she ran the WWE and how many people they employed.
Oh, yeah.
My wife wanted to call and tell whoever was doing the interview how many people they put out of business.
Yep.
They put every promotion in the country out of business. All the boys, you know,
that's
the handful
true.
They took. Look how many boys, you know, none of us other than
they
being
closed
the
down show. All the territories, Carolina, Florida, Tennessee, all. They closed all of them down.
And you know, I've said this before on this show, Jackie. None of us on this show tonight have any connections with the business other than being on this show. I mean, we don't run towns. We don't promote towns. We don't work for an office. We're done. He put us all out of business.
Yep.
Exactly.
He's the one. I'm glad you brought that up. He's the one that put us all out of business just because of his greedy self. Now, I don't know if you knew his father. He was a good man. You know him, Dickie. You knew Vince Jr., Vince Sr.
Oh, yeah, I worked for him.
He was a good man. Yeah.
But I'm
glad you brought that up. You're exactly right. Vince put most of them out of business. You're exactly right.
I mean, that's my feelings, you know.
You're 100% right. Do you
watch any wrestling on TV now?
I try not to, but I do.
I don't.
I got to watch and see how bad it is.
Well, that's bad.
It's bad. I mean, if you're talking about a work, they're showing you it's a work, you know. I mean, holy mackerel. I mean, you know, they look like Dick Steinborn in his day born.
Well, let me tell you one thing.
Oh, wait a minute. Dickie's there with us.
Yeah, listen, here's one thing. Here's their defense. Jerry Briscoe went to Penn State, and he got this Brock Siegler.
Come on.
He's an amateur. He's a champion. Anybody's come up to him and say his wrestling fake? Well, what do you think he's going to do? And the heavyweight they got out of Princeton also. They got two shooters in there. They're taking the amateurs. They're going around. He's a scout now. Going around, taking them, changing the business. Well, that's great. That's what they should do. That's survival. Any 500-pound guy or 400-pound guy wants to get in the ring and challenge him, go ahead.
I warn you, not going to let up, are you? I love you like a brother, but you're not going to let up. You're going to tell me it's all right to let these marks tell me what a phony I am when I've had my ribs busted, my eyes busted, my nose broke, my fingers all broke, and I'm broke too. I ain't got no money.
why do you think I never went to? Why do you think I never worked in Tennessee long? He gave me all the excuses.
I was the only one who can make any money there in Tennessee. I'll say one thing: Nick Doolis, everybody cussed him, but at the end of every week, he'd walk up and hand me $500 bills. So I didn't have much.
I want to know one thing: why?
Why? Because I was a draw card, and because I was making him money, and because he didn't want me to leave or even threaten to leave.
Fantastic.
Well, Jack,
as long as he took care of you, that's all that matters.
Do what?
That's as long as he took care of you, that's all that matters.
Yeah, well, you know, in this business, it's a damn shame, but we... You know, you have to take care of yourself. You got to, you know, you can't lay back and depend on somebody else to take care of you. You know,
you got
to do it yourself.
You sure do. That's a fact.
And it's just, man, we had such a great business. Dickie, you know this too. You had to name all the territories. My God, we had some great people. Then you do 6-8 weeks and move on. And do 6-8 more weeks and move on, you know. What a great business we had. Still, it's a great business, but it's not like it used to be and never will be again.
Well, when we hit those towns that just got the television, and you worked in the promoter says, hey, you got over on TV last week, our first show, would you like to stay? Well, you become a homesteader.
Yeah, there you are, yep. That's what you were, a homesteader.
That's right. So
I haven't heard that in a long time, Dickie.
You know, when I went to Nashville late in life working there, I couldn't believe, I was Mr. Wrestling, you go from Nashville to Memphis, 200 miles and back. In Louisville, 200 miles and back. It was like a spoke of a wheel. And Lexington and Evansville, 200 miles. 800 miles a week. Put it in cruise control, beautiful. Beautiful, nice scenery and so forth. To get in the ring and do what you love best, and you know you're going to get paid for it. Think positive and come all the way back. Well, also, the people on the highway, and you're thinking to yourself, what do they do? They got a job, 8 to 5. And I hope they hold on to their job. As long as the tires are full and the gasolines are full, we can make it.
Yeah, well, you know, we take a hell of a chance traveling up and down the road and you know, get a guy like Dick Steinbord and can't work and he potatoes you and knocks you on your ass. And, oh, wait a minute, I mean, nuts Dick Steinbord. Oh, did I You know, you got to watch out for all them tater guys because them crowbars was hell, buddy. I was talking, I was somewhere, and I was talking about kayfabe, and they said, I don't see him. I said, you dumbass, you don't know what kayfabe is? He said, I thought it was a person. I said, well, it's not a person. Oh, boy. Dickie, take over.
They were
Jackie. Jackie,
I got a question for Jackie. You were talking about potatoes. Do you remember coming into Mobile and working about 4 weeks in Mobile working against Bob Kelly? I know
yep.
You took some potatoes working with him.
I remember working. Let me tell you, that we were working, me and Don and Roughhouse.
What do you mean?
Garbage.
All dressed alike, you know. We all dressed alike, and we were working with Galento and somebody on the fields, maybe it was a split, you know. So after the matches, we go into the restaurant there. Dickie, what's the name of it? You guys should know.
I didn't know, but go ahead. It's downtown.
Well, anyway, it was a restaurant there. So we go in, and Glento starts a fight and all that. You know, I never did like that stuff. But anyway, they call the police, and here comes the police. Me and Don. Got baby blue suits, red shirt, white tie, blonde hair, and, you know, and we're trying to talk our way out of going to jail, and here comes Roughhouse out of Dewhouse, and he's got the blue suit and red shirt, white tie, dressed just like us, blonde hair. He said, hey, boy, are you with them? He said, no, I'm not with them. I never seen them before. He said, no, I've never seen one. That's a rough house, wasn't it?
Damn.
Oh.
That was a rough house. Boys, I'm telling you, we, like I said, I wouldn't trade nothing for the business I've been through. And, you know, I had the honor of going to Cuba before Castro. And Pedro, what's his name, Dickie?
Pedro Cadoy.
Yeah. Boy, that was nice over there. Beautiful beaches and just palm trees down Main Street, El Prado Street, and it was just gorgeous. Boy, and been all over the world, Tokyo, and just, you know, places that people that will never have a chance to go.
I enjoyed it, and I'd do it again, I guess. When you were in Cuba, wasn't it Batista was the head guy, and then Castro came out of the hills and took over the country? Were you there before Castro?
I was there before Castro. Oh, yeah, we couldn't have been there after. Yeah, I was there before Castro, Dickie. Pedro took me over there from Florida. I was coming back home, and he took me over there.
Did you have to have a passport to go over there?
No.
Really?
No, it was only like an hour and 15 minutes or something to fly there. You know, it's only 90 miles or something like that, Dickie.
Did they pay American money?
Yeah, $200. and all expenses. And then he wanted me to stay another 6 weeks, and it paid $250. And I got a damn letter from dear old Uncle Sam wanting me in the United States Army. I said, "How much you pay?" He said, "No, it ain't one of the boys. We don't pay like they do."
What year was you down there in Cuba?
1950 and 51. Pedro Godoy.
Yeah.
Yep, that's before Castro. That was 1951.
Did you work one time a week down there?
No, Dickie. I think it was a couple times a week, maybe three. I'm not for sure. Man, what gorgeous beaches and sand and beautiful. And El Prado was the main street, and it was, oh, man, it was gorgeous. Just marbled palm trees down both sides of the street. It was really gorgeous.
You wrestle heel or baby face?
I was baby face. I don't know how, but I guess because Pedro wore the mask. You know, hey, he's hollering, "Come back, come back, come back." I said, "What?" He said, "Oh, I was green too. You know, I didn't know what he meant. You know, he's fixing to have a riot, man. Them people was going to get after him." He's hollering, "Come back, come back." I said, "Where have I been?" Oh, boy, what a business. Dickie, I wish you would have been in it with us. We was all had fun, buddy. Are you still there, Steinborn?
Yes, I didn't want to go through Tennessee with all the hard ways that was going over there with Buddy Fuller and you.
How did you know that? Boy, oh boy, I've still got them. There was a lot of them going on down there, and them guys wasn't making no money either. But anyway, I give them credit. They was honored to the business, you know, to poke their eye out there and let you bust it.
You know, for a couple of weeks I was there at one time going through, I knew they had 40 towns in 1 week. I saw the booking sheet. They bring in the dressing room, you had to sign it, and I counted Monday. Yeah, they had 8 towns on a Monday. And when you worked in the first match Monday night, you got in the car and you drove 85 miles to the next town to work the main event. And they crisscrossed them. I said, "This is crazy."
What year was this?
54.
Oh, okay. We left New York. Went in there in 57, I believe. I'm not for sure, Dickie, but I can't remember exactly. But I never will forget. We come out of New York, our last shot there, we made $750 in Newark. And we go to Tennessee, and we're booked in Bible, Arkansas. I went down there, and Herb Welch gave us $15. I said, "Thank you." "What the hell is this?" He said, "That's a payoff." I said, "The payoff for what?" $15 stinking dollars, and we just got $750 two nights before. Hey, well, man, listen, they ran some crap towns. I mean, Pikeville and Blythe, oh, man, it was terrible. I will say that. I made a lot of money there now, but, man, they ran some terrible towns. And you had to learn to play basketball because Georgie had to play basketball. Oh, brother. And Tojo, you had to pick him up by the, let him sit on your shoulder so he could dunk one once in a while, or so George. Oh, boy, what a business. Take over, Dickie. Dick, I can't believe you've been so quiet tonight. Am I that slack jawed? Gee whiz, I thought Steinborn could talk. I believe I'm about to talk to you.
Well, listen, you're on a roll. I don't want to interrupt you. Keep going.
The roll's run out, and I'm telling you it has.
Well, let me help you guys out between you and Dick. Let me throw some names out at you guys and see what it brings to mind. How about Rocky and Curtis Smith?
Yep.
Yeah, he's
yeah you're talking
team.
About, there was, no, might be the, you talking about the guys from Mobile?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I think it was from, yeah, they were originally from Dire Inferno.
Kirk.
The Infernos?
Yeah, they were from Tennessee originally.
No. No, they weren't Tennessee, but oh, the Infernos. You talking about Gypsy Joe and
the Infernos.
Okay,
well,
yeah,
Rocky,
okay.
Rocky Smith and his younger brother Curtis.
Yeah, okay, I got you. Yeah, you're right. Okay. Somebody say something.
Jackie, did you ever do any booking in Tennessee?
Did I see any, or did I do it? Yes, I did it.
You did the booking up there, too?
I was the bookmaker, yeah, and I don't know. All my friends turned against me for some reason.
I wonder why.
Here comes Joe Blow, said, why in the hell am I in Slotsville? I said, well, we needed some. Another guy said, hey, what am I doing in Briarville? Nothing. I lost a lot of friends there for some reason. I couldn't figure out why, but I did.
Oh, you know something? Let's see. I was in the dressing room in Columbus, Georgia, and Frankie Kane comes up to me. He was teamed with Rocky Smith at the time. Infernos or whatever. So it was a 5-week program. I just kept one week after another week. And I noticed that Curtis had a built-up shoe. He had a short leg. I kept looking at it. And he couldn't, if you noticed it, it was a little bit higher normally. Well, when I started to work for my dad and I started putting that program out, I needed a story. And he was down there, and I gave him the idea of tapping that heel and tapping that toe. And I wrote it in the story in my love, Matt, that says, and this is a true story because you can find this out. In 1923, some guy devised a squatting machine. Not a machine, but my dad used to say you put the weights on your back and you go up and down. This guy made a circle in front. There's nothing there. So consider 3 feet in front of you to the left, the right, a circle. Draw a chalk circle. So you can squat down and you can almost know where that chalk is on the thing. You're squatting down where that chalk is. Now, supply that circle with a round 4-inch or 3.5-inch pipe and put inside there mercury, liquid mercury. And then you leave about 10%, 8% of air in there. I mean, you're supposed to squat and come up with this thing. When the mercury goes forward, it almost pulls you. You almost got to run to catch it. Somehow, the ingredients inside there, this guy was trying to patent this thing, but it didn't work because of that. So I wrote that in that program. That's what he's got in his foot. So that's Rocky. He loved it. He used to, when the referee turned around, he tapped that toe. He'd hold on to that second to the top rope and lean back, and he topped that toe, and he'd come over and hit the guy in the head. And then when the people would scream and holler, then he'd bang that heel down. He was putting it back, sliding it back. And the people believed it.
Yeah. They believed it. It was true. I seen it. I seen him do it. Dickie, you no good. You're trying to bust my little onions, aren't you?
No.
I seen him do it, Dickie. I seen him, and that guy went down when he hit him with it, too. Hey, one of you guys bust Dickie's little onions there. Dickie, I'll never get over it as long as I live. I just can't help myself. I'm sorry. I wish I could. You've talked to me about it, and
I was telling you guys, him that story about Sailor Thomas, and he said, yeah, we're cover him with the blanket. And he was howling on the other side of the phone, you're killing me! You're killing me, Dickie! And I was hitting him with the punchline. What am I supposed to cover him with, Mr. Phil? Oh, you cover him with a blanket. Where does that get to the blanket?
Dickie, you're talking about
boy.
Him doing that boot thing, you know, and it's all in the way it's presented. How much money did you make when you put a piece of white tape around your middle finger?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
All in the way it was presented.
You're exactly right. How about the little $2 bottle of what makes your hair blonde?
Peroxide.
I hate all these guys copying me. I had blonde hair, and they all started copying me for some reason. Then I do the strut, and they're all trying to do that. But I'd often tell them, often imitated but never duplicated, the one and only fabulous Jackie Fargo.
That's right.
Blow that smoke, brother. Blow that smoke.
Oh, thank you, Dickie. I was a hell of a worker, Dickie. I know you guys didn't see it because I was over... Hey, this is a true story. This is a God's truth. I wrestled in the United States Army. So they're saying, boys, we're having a contest and anybody boxing, wrestling, anything. And so I went and I said, yeah, I'm a professional wrestler. I'd wrestled 3 matches, I think. And I wrestled in the Army, and damn, if I didn't have a riot, and there I was... Some big guy weighed about 400 pounds was shooting with me, and I'm weighing about 180 trying to keep him from shooting. But it was we had a hell of a, just about a riot in there when I got the referee down and smothered him. Something happened. I forget how it was. But anyway, it was, I forgot about doing that in the Army. They owe me some money for that. The payoff was about like Nick Gurley's. I shouldn't say that because I got paid good from Nicky. Dick Steinborn, how was Cowboy Luttrell? I worked for him, but I can't remember the payoffs. Herbie Freeman make up the payments?
Yeah, it was Charlie Lay was in the front office there, and Herbie was alive at the time. Working with Cowboy, and then when Eddie left out of New York, he came down there and he started giving some ideas.
Yeah.
Cowboy took him in as a partner, and then the television hit, and it went from there. Herbie disappeared, and he died.
Yeah.
Charlie Lay died, and all of a sudden the Briscoes were in there, and then Buddy Colt bought in. And that's another thing about, you talk about the visit at the Mobile reunion. If you look at the big sign over the stage, it says we're. Oh, grudges are forgotten and friendships are renewed. And it's really
big. I love that, Sam.
And I went to that reunion, and Buddy was standing there with me, and he bumped into me, and he said, you know, you shouldn't have ran with Gunkel, and I had lost money in Tampa. And I grabbed him by the shoulder and shot with him. I turned him around and pushed his head. I said, read that sign up there. It's over, buddy. Don't you understand? It's over. I swear to God, he changed from then. That afternoon, he was shaking everybody's hand. He was smiling.
Oh, that was good. That's a good saying, but I don't believe in it.
You still got it, you son of a gun.
I don't believe in it. Never mind, you snap again. You're the cocksucker, son of a bitch. You never ever been there. Nobody was ever threatened to Jack Pepper. Who was that, Dickie?
Yeah,
them guys don't know who I'm imitating, do they?
They don't know how Steffi used to talk, and he was a Russian Jew, and that's how he used to talk. And after a while, you hang around him, you're picking up his accent, you're talking to your people like that, because he was so unique and so different. And this is what he used to say, you know, you son of a gun, you got, your daddy, he's got arms like railroad tracks. He pick up one building, one hand, what a son of a gun either. That was Jack Steffi, so... Every time I saw Jackie Fargo in Washington, he would be, Becky, you son of a gun. He was imitating Jack. I was imitating Jack. Jackie, it's good to see. Well, we kept doing this over the territory. I swear to you, in Washington, D.C., I'm in the dressing room, and Jackie's like, who do you think walks in? Jack Pfeffer. The minute he walks in, I stood up, and I went like, Jack, you son of a bitch. How are you doing? I'm going to say him. Fargo does the same thing. It's like it was sucked in to do it. It was a three-way Jack Pepper conversation. We all sounded like him.
Yes, sir. He was I don't know how he got so powerful in the wrestling business. People were scared of him. Fred Kohler, Jim Crockett. Why, Dickie? Why was people so scared of Jack Pepper?
When he became a partner with Paul Bowser in Boston, Paul Bowser messed him around. Well, he says, I'll get back at the wrestling business. So he became an outlaw, and he also had a newspaper guy, Dan Parker, who he called in and gave him the Madison Square Garden show ending. And when the people left the Madison Square Garden on Saturday night, they picked up the Saturday night paper, and there was all the endings printed already. And Seth, they gave it to the guy. He had spies.
True story.
They feared him, and then he started imitating. He had a Zuma imitating Artonita Rocker, and then Bruno.
Tell him about the bald-headed angel, him ringing the cowboy, Dickie.
It said he had the girl wrestler, the bald-headed angel. And who's the one he imitated, San Martino?
Isaac Rosario, Gypsy Joe Rosario, with Bruno Sammartino.
That's it. He kept doing all of those imitating people. And on top of that, you see, the alliances of the United States was a monopoly. When the spies from the New York Treasury Department sat in on the NWA meeting in St. Louis. They were blackballing guys already, and they exposed it. It is a monopoly. Well, left on the shelf. When I went to work for Von Fuller in Knoxville after wrestling for a year, I used to work in the office, they had a new law called the Sunset Law. They were shutting down all of the wrestling commissions in Tennessee. What was happening was, after World War II, that's what I studied. After World War II, the taxes were... put into the athletic commission. Well, what do you think these guys did every year? $40,000 a year. They went to Las Vegas. You could not run a show in any town in Tennessee unless you had a sponsor, and either had to be a Veterans of Foreign War, American Legion, and they took 8%. And where was it going? So the United States government came in, because I had to get on the airplane and fly to Memphis to the meeting and sit there. And the guy says to me. He says, you work for the office? I says, yes. He says, do you have the taxes for this past year? I says, what do you mean? I says, isn't it paid in advance and so forth? He says, what's the bank number? I said, tell me what's going on. And he says, what he told me. He said, we're shutting down all the Americans. It's not your fault. He said, you're not going to be taking 8% off the towns anymore. Well, I went back and told Ron. He was happy, but I had to wait a little while. So it's called the Sunset Law. Now. That's why Vince McMahon in New York has wrestlers as referees. They don't have to go through.
How the hell did he get that uni hold body? How did McMahon, Dick? How did he do that? How did he get all the TV and all the?
The father wanted to go one way, and the young boy said no. I mean, the boy said, "I want to go this way," and the father said, "No, you'll never make it if you go independent." He, Vince McMahon Jr., found somebody else to buy his father out.
And he hated his father. Out,
he bought his father out, then he picked back up with that partner, and I guess he bought him out later on, too, and he continued on. Dumb and Broad Street, he's $4 billion. That's what he's worth.
Where is he getting these guys? Where does he get these guys? I mean,
he's got,
you know, where do they come from?
He's got Jerry Briscoe as his agent, and Jerry goes around to these colleges now. Buddy Fuller told me that one time. He went to a wrestling meet, and he says he was going to get one of the guys to turn him pro, give him a little contract, and this is back in the 50s, early 50s. And he says, I saw the guy that won in first place. I got down on the mat, he says, and I asked him, he says, first of all, he says he would have never made it in the wrestling business. I said, why, buddy? He says, he didn't have the personality. The guy that came in fourth, he said they hired him. But he could wrestle. So it was the personality you get.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just... I had two guys come here just 2 weeks ago and said, are you Jackie Parker? I said, who are you looking for, pal? Jackie Parker. I said, well, that's me. He said, well, I'm... John so-and-so, and I'm so-and-so, and we want to start up wrestling. I said, well, good luck. He said, no, we're planning on you helping us. I said, well, buddy, hey, I'm 60 years old. I ain't got time to help you. No, I'm 61. Anyway, I said, I don't have time to help you. He said, well, can you come and work out with us guys and show us what to do and what not to do? I said, buddy, you got to do that on your own. Nobody can show you. I said, if I get a hold of you, I'm going to break your arm or your leg, you know, and you can't do that to me because I'm not going to let you have my arm or leg, but I can break yours anytime I want to. So if you want to take that chance, oh, no, we thought it was. I said, well, by God, it's not. And see, I shouldn't have got mad, but I did. It pissed me off bad. And I said, well, I'm just that, you know, I said, I'm not interested in. And I said, you got any money?
Jackie, learn this as a philosophy. When somebody comes up to you like this guy and he says, no, if he comes up to you, I would like to, there's four words. You can't afford me. Period.
That's good. That's good.
You can't afford me. I did it once before. The guy said, I think you can. I turned around and said, $3,000. He said, okay. There was no conversation. That's why he asked you.
He had $300. I said, come on in, pal. We'll talk.
No, you can't afford me. No. When you say you can't afford me, then he's going to say, well, what kind of price are you looking at? Then it's like an auction. You auction your body. You say, well, what do you think I'm worth?
Yeah.
Don't waste your time. You're going to draw any money? I don't want to see you lose any money. How much?
I just thought somebody would come in and say, oh, man, yeah, I want to teach you to wrestle. Come on in, man. Let me teach you right now. We'll make some money. But, Dick, where do you go to be a wrestler nowadays?
You go to acrobatic school and acting school.
You're not going to let up on me, are you, Dickie?
No, I'm telling you the truth.
How about a double wrist lock and a crotch hold and all that jazz? Now, you know, you can't just... no use talking to you. He's gonna bust my little onions no matter what I say. He's gonna crack my onions. He knows I'm dead set against anybody that knocks my business.
To answer your question, Jackie, they don't need to learn to wrestle anymore because there's only three holds: a clothesline, a stomp, and a punch.
Over the top rope. You're exactly right. You're 100% right. I mean, and that's a damn shame. That's a shame. Well, they come out, and they back one in the ropes, and bam, 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 and then he knocks the other one across, and bam, bam, bam. They don't know how to get a hold. They don't know how to sell a hold. They don't know how... getting mad talking about it.
There's a young man here in Georgia.
Boy, I'd love to go through this damn TV when I watch it. I got to quit watching it. I broke three TVs already.
There's a young guy here in Georgia that had a little old promotion. He was running up North Georgia, and he got on a little cable TV channel, and he brought me a tape, and he said, I want you to watch it and tell me what you think. So I watched the first match he had on there, and he come back to me, and he goes, what do you think? And I said, well, I want you to watch it with me. And I put it in, and I sat through it a second time, which was torture. But I said, that match lasted 15 minutes. I said, tell me what was missing. And he said, well, I don't know. He said, man, the fans were into it. And he said, they did this. And I said, tell me what was missing. He said, well, I don't know what you're driving at. I said, bud, I said, there wasn't one wrestling hold in the 15 minutes the two guys was in the ring.
Yeah.
I said, not one.
You watch this crap on Monday nights, and you won't see no rotten tonight. They got it up tonight from where, Dickie? Florida? No, Texas. Texas. That's the one that Hulk Hogan and them's got Thursday night wrestling in Texas. That used to be Dixie Carter's.
Yeah.
Hey, how about you guys telling a few stories? Me and Dick's told you ours. How about you guys tell us a few stories?
Well, I want to ask you about one more match and I'm not trying to make you feel old, Jackie, but
I am old. Hell, I'm older dirt.
the last time you came into to Mobile, and I grew up in the Mobile area, so that's the reason I saw this. It was in late 73. They had a night of champions in Mobile, and you were on the semi-main event for the world junior title, and you worked with Hodge. What was that like?
It was good. I like working with Danny. He wouldn't try to hurt you. He wouldn't try to put on a show for none, boys or nothing. I enjoyed working with Danny. Danny and I are good friends. He's to me, he's a good fellow. Good for the business. You ever seen him take an apple and put it in his hand and squeeze the son of a bitch and juice out of it?
Yep.
That'd be all I ever seen. And I said, damn. But I seen Danny here last year, I think, somewhere, or a year before, and he looked bad. You know, he looked about as bad as I do.
That's what he
said.
Well,
not quite that bad, but bad. Hey, how about you guys tell us some more stories? I'm glad you remembered that when in Mobile. I remember one night, that was a dangerous-ass place. And you know the bad part about it? The policemen were marks.
Yep.
So Donnie and I are working with the Fields brothers. And here they come strutting out across from way back at the dressing room. And bam, boom, and we get them down and get them going. And here comes the damn people, and the police are helping them. And Donnie, we went down, it was 2 out of 3, and Donnie said, I ain't going back out. I said, oh, hell with them people. I said, come on, we ain't no quitter. And we went back out, and some guy cut the bottom rope. I said, I'm a quitter, Donnie, let's go. I said, let's get the hell out of here. That was a damn shame. Them police were all marks. I mean, they were all damn marks. I couldn't believe it. I don't know what happened to that territory. They made a lot of money there. How about that little guy that had the stock car? What was his name?
Lee Fields.
No.
Oh, Skippy Wetchum?
Skippy.
Yeah.
Skippy Wetchum, yeah. He passed away several years ago.
Damn. Are they still trying to have a reunion there?
Oh, yeah. Every March. Every March.
I've never been there, but I don't think I want to go from what Dickie tells me. Not putting no heat on you, Dickie, or nothing, but, you know, I don't want to go down there and talk to 3 wrestlers and 400 marks, you know. Gee whiz, you know, I can stay home and talk to the marks without... They walk up and down my street. Hey, buddy, how you doing? That was one just went by.
Michael, tell him about the Donnie story with the commissioner about the street fight match.
I guess it was 74, 75. You know Donnie better than any of us. They had he was working with Nick Kozak in the Mobile territory, and the blow-off for their match, they were going to have a Hell's Kitchen street fight where they'd come out dressed in suits and they'd fight till one of them was stripped down to his tights, his trunks. And naturally, Donnie's putting Kozak over, but he accidentally, on purpose, forgot his trunks.
I guarantee you he didn't forget them. That son of a bitch did that on purpose.
And it just so happened, the night that they had that match in Mobile, the Alabama Boxing and Wrestling Commissioner and his wife were sitting on front row. So where do you think Don stood?
Oh, geez. Oh, boy, oh, boy. Oh, man, the fun. We had more fun together and more laughs and done more bull than any two could ever do in 4 lifetimes. Man, it was great. I loved it. I love Don Fargo now. He's my pal.
Yeah. He's a good guy.
He's, well, a lot of Dickie don't like him too good, but I do. Dickie, I'm glad you're there for me to put somebody. No, Dickie likes Don.
I've known him for 54 years.
Yeah, I know.
You know, the funniest thing I ever saw him do, I'm in the dressing room in Sacramento. It's a theater-type dressing room with the mirrors and the little bulbs coming out. And Roy Shires is sitting on that thing, and he's talking to Lothario and Pepe Gomez and Ron Hill, the booker. And as I look over to the left, Donnie was in the shower. He had soaped up his whole body. And he walks into this area where you're looking at him now. You know, the little vestibule there, and he's soaping himself up. He's looking at Shires, and he's soaping him, and I'm watching him. And he slowly moves on back behind the wall, back in there, and he goes and gets a cigar, and he wets the cigar. It's really wet. And he comes back out, and right in that little area right there, he squats. And he puts his hand underneath his body, and he goes, "Ah!" He screams real loud, and Shires looks, and Pepper looks, stands up, and he throws his arm like a baseball player, and he slings that cigar across the room, wet. It went into 1,000 pieces. And Shires, I swear to God, he dove on the floor. He was on his hands and knees like a wrestler. And he looked at Ron Hill, and he said, "What the hell?" He said, "Fire that son of a bitch." Ron Hill said, "You can't, he's drawing you too much money." I'll never forget that.
Where is Ronnie Garvin?
He's flying an airplane around Knoxville someplace.
What do you mean, flying an airplane?
He works for some company. I forgot what it is. Maybe somebody else knows.
He's not a pilot, though.
Yeah, he flies his own plane.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know that.
Mac McMurray lives on a mountaintop outside Kingsport. I went over there one time with my wife. And you're up on this big hill. You think you're in Japan, one of those big hills. And he's got a big house on this. And you look across there, and there's another big hill. And there's a valley. I mean, it's in Tennessee. And he says, Ronnie comes fly with that airplane, comes up that valley. And he buzzes his house. He's flying for the postal FedEx. I have no idea.
Yeah, it's a commercial. He flies a big DC-9. It's a big plane.
Does he really? Yeah, it's a big plane.
Says,
my own plane.
Max says when he buzzes that house and turns them lights on, the moonshiners go crazy.
Yeah, I'll bet. I'll bet they do.
Well, I've been mentioning the Mobile territory. We got a caller from Mobile. I'm going to get him on the line with us real quick.
All right.
Caller from Mobile, you're on the line. Go ahead.
Hey.
I figured that's it.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, it's Joe Turner. Fargo, you know me as Joe Sky.
Hey, Joe, you old bastard, you. I'm glad somebody's older than I am on this damn phone.
I seen you on TV, and I thought my screen was messing up. Had so many lines in it, and I realized
No. You said, God almighty, I can remember when I was his lover. Joe, how you doing, buddy? What are you doing in Mobile?
I live here, and I'm working at a casino.
Good.
I'm fixing to retire from that. But I called up because I thought it'd be an interesting story. I heard a story one time about down in Florida where somebody stood in the alley and let the air out of your tires.
You saw me.
And I heard that story. Another thing, and I honestly, too, would like to hear the true story about you being involved in getting the Pusser movie going.
Well, you know, me and Eddie Bond was involved in that. You know, you knew Eddie.
Oh, yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, I knew Eddie.
Yeah, if it hadn't been for us, he'd have never had no movie going. Buford Pusser was a big goofball, you know.
Oh, no.
If he's still living, I wouldn't say that, but He didn't know which side was up sometimes, you know. But he was mean as hell. Now he took a guy down in the creek and shot him full of holes all around him. And he said, "If you get up, I'm gonna kill you." The guy didn't get up. And you remember that, Joe?
Yeah, I remember a lot of them stories, but I just never got the story straight about So y'all being involved about, you know, helping him get it going, the movie.
Yeah, we did. Me and Eddie Bond helped him get it going. But Eddie made the song about Buford Posser. Well, I forget how it went. But, yeah, we got him in the movie and got made him all that money, you know, and he didn't say thank you.
Yeah,
he didn't have sense enough. He didn't know how to say thank you or kiss my foot or nothing, you know. Let me tell you a little story about him, Joe. One Saturday night, he said, "Won't you come up and ride with me tonight?" I said, Pusser, I ain't got time to mess with you. I got to work. So anyway, he talked me out into coming up there to his hometown and ride with him. We got us some fifth vodka and riding in a police car and they pull over some kid, and I look up, and I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Let me pull over this kid here." He looked to me about 17 or 18, and Buford's talking to him. Next thing I know, that damn kid flew over the car. I mean, over it. Not around it or on it, but over the damn car. And I said, "What in the hell are you doing?" "Ha, ha, ha, ha." I said, "Buford, that wasn't funny to me." I said, "That's stupid as hell to hit a kid, an 18-year-old kid like that, for God's sakes." Back, he said, "Oh, I thought that would be funny to you." I said, "Well, it wasn't." But he did. He knocked that kid's head off. I don't know how it stayed on his shoulders.
Didn't he do something stupid at your club one time?
Yeah, and I told him, I said, "You son of a bitch, you come up here." He shot my TV.
That's what I heard.
And I said, "You son of a bitch, you come up here and I'll shoot you." He said, "Oh, me and you all right, Fargo, me and you all right." He was scared of wrestlers.
Yeah.
And so he told me, he said, "You know, all right, where's your partners, Joe?"
"Bill, he's living down in Florida. He's on the phone here somewhere probably.
Bill actually didn't call in tonight, or I'd have put him on the air. He didn't call in tonight. I call and check on him.
Uh-huh.
Joe, it's been a pleasure talking to you, buddy. My God, I'm glad that somebody's on here older than I am.
Yeah. I tell you what, you still didn't tell the story about the, somebody letting air out of your tires and they were standing in the alleyway.
How in the hell do you remember that?
I'll tell you what it is.
I can't remember my birthdays of my kid, but I can remember all them things that went on in the business.
God almighty, that's been a million years ago. Good Lord.
Hold it, Jackie, this is Dick.
Yeah.
Let me tell you the story. I'm the one that told the story. Here's what happened. Don't say anything. You were in Tampa, and Donnie was in Tampa, and I was wrestling against Donnie. I think at the week, 2 weeks before, it was a 30-minute draw. I had more draw matches with Donnie in Florida because he taught me the Rogers style. Next week is 45 minutes, and then it's an hour or whatever. So after the matches, you took Bell Star over to Ebo City, and you pulled him to his nightclub, and you went inside. And there was nobody on the street because there was a club going on, music and so forth. And Donnie and I, he was in my car, and we followed you. And just when you got out, and the guy came out to the valet to take the car away, I pulled into an alleyway. We pulled way back in the back of the alleyway. And Donnie had to go to the bathroom, so he's in the back of the alley with his pants dropped. And I go around the corner, and I'm looking. And what?
You no good, dirty, rotten, low-down, 14-carat son of a sap sucker. You always wonder.
I ran over there before that guy took your car away. And I'm sorry. You turned it down. I ran over and took your back tire. I took the little cap off, and I put a little pebble in it, and I screwed it back onto that little valve, and I heard,
I remember.
You came out, and I ran back over in that corner, and it was after the matches Tuesday night, and I heard, I swear, that's when you brought the valet out, and you saw the flat tire, and I heard you holler, it was echoed, "Son of a bitch," and the guy heard that he took the hubcap on here, it hit the street, it went wow, 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 wow. And then, as I started to move, two squad cars pulled into the alleyway with the cops out.
I remember that, too. I remember that. I said, them son of a bitches let the air out of my tire and tried to steal my car or something like that. I forget what it was.
And then, they got the flashlight on Donnie's just pulling his pants on, and the guy says, "What's going on here?" I says, "Look, I work for Cavour Electrical." He said, "Yeah, well, yeah." And who's that back there? I says, "Well, that's Donnie Colt." He says, "I work for Cavour Electrical." He says, "Well, we need to get him on." No, I says, "I wrestled him tonight. What we do? We play the prank on this guy over here." He looked at me. He says, "Let me tell you something. We've had more robberies around here." He says, "Now you can play your prank someplace else, and get the hell out of here." And they took him back and took off.
That was backfire on you. I remember that. I sure as hell do. Sky, how in the hell do you remember that?
Because it was funny.
Like I said, I can remember all that crap that went on better than I can remember my kids' birthdays.
Holy crack, I'm on it, Joe. I'll be damned. It's good hearing from you, Joe. It really is. I mean that sincerely. Very good to hear from you.
Well, good talking to you, man. I'll let y'all get back to your stories. I just thought I'd call in and ask about those.
Joe, pleasure talking to you, buddy. Good luck to you.
All right, we'll see you later, Fargo.
All right, buddy.
All right, see the rest of you guys. Bye.
Bye.
Joe Sky, nice man. Nice guy, Dickie. You know him?
Oh, yeah. Worked with him many times.
Yeah. Dickie, how much time we got?
We're under 10 minutes, so I'm gonna test everybody's memories. Jackie,
okay.
Every week we do a name of the week, and I named it after Jerry for his natural products that he sells. It's our Jerry Oates name of the week, and what I try and do is come up with a name that a lot of people have forgotten about and weren't real big stars in the business. But this time I did a little something different. I pulled a name that I think I'm gonna stump everybody but you with. And that name's Dick Bishop. Any of you guys ever work with a Dick Bishop?
Yes, hold on. Bishop. Dick Bishop. What territory?
New York.
Yeah, I thought one.
Yep.
Wait a minute. Dick Bishop. It's a trick question.
No, he's a Jewish. Dick Bishop.
Bishop. That's not Dick Byers, is it?
No, it's Honey Boy Fargo.
Right. It's Jackie Fargo.
That was my name, Dick Bishop. You know who gave me that name, Dick?
Well, how do they call you, what's the other word? What a name?
Wildman Fargo? No, this was before Babe, what's his name, the booker there? Tanglefoot.
Babe Shockey.
Yeah, he's the one that gave me that name, Dickie Bishop. How'd you remember that? Where'd you hear that name?
I don't feel hot.
Where'd you hear that name?
I did a little digging around on your career.
You sure did, buddy. That Dick Bishop.
I thought Pepper gave you that name, but he's the one who gave you the Fargo name.
Yeah. No, it might have been Pepper, be honest with you, to tell you the truth. No, I gave my own self the Fargo name. But I think you might be right. I think he did. Pfeffer did. Cause I went to Boston to work for him. Sure did. He gave me the name Dick Bishop.
Where did Fargo come from?
I got Herbie Freeman. Wasn't that his the booker in? Florida.
Yeah.
He said. Get you a name like Billy or Jackie or Fargo or something. I said, okay, Jackie Fargo. I love that man. I'm telling you, I love that man.
Yeah.
Jackie Fargo. boys, I don't know about you guys, but I've had a hell of a good time tonight.
Well, good. We appreciate you being on with us. It's been an honor having you on with us.
Well, you guys are doing a great job. Keep up the good work, and I really mean it. How about you, Steinborn?
Yeah, what you need to do is just next Thursday, just call in, and don't push the button, but just listen. And if you want to push the button, push the button. I'd like to remind you guys, if you want to go to that Tennessee reunion, Legends reunion, it's Scott Teal's place, September the 29th, October the 1st.
Did them guys know that Teal was running one in Tennessee now?
Yeah, I think they've all been informed.
Yeah.
Okay. He's taken over Kelly. Kelly don't. I called him 3 or 4 times, and they said no such a number here. Nobody's here by that name, and I could tell it was his wife or daughter or something, you know. So I said, hell, I won't call back no more. So I never heard from him since then. That's been 10, 15 years ago. Come on, Dickie.
I'm not sure where I'm going to be at the end of September after I finish up where I'm at now. I think I'm going to Louisiana, but I'm not sure.
Well, good luck wherever you go. You know, you guys are doing a good job. I appreciate you doing it. And don't have Steinborn on her too much. He knocks the business. Dickie will cuss me out after you guys hang up. No. We need more people like Dick Steinborn in this business. I mean that, except, you know.
Hey, Jackie, I've said this before, and I'll say it all the time. My dad was standing at the American Legion watching the matches that he was promoting, and I came out of the dressing room, and I stood there with my father, the great promoter, the former wrestler and so forth. He was proud to be a promoter, and some fan comes up to my dad and says, hey, Milo, he says, is wrestling fake? My dad looks at me and says, look at the matches over there. And he says, the only thing on the level out there is the ring. How can you argue that?
That's the damn truth.
I'm sitting in the ticket office in Atlanta, Georgia, and I had refereed Friday night, and this is like Monday or Tuesday the next week, and we had done something. I don't know what we had done. But this guy comes to get his tickets, and he steps up to the window, and I'm sitting in the chair there. And this guy takes a step back, and, buddy, he just absolutely lit into me. I mean, he was just giving me up one side and down the other. And I just sat there in the chair and watched him, let him go on for about 5 minutes. And I finally leaned up, and I walked over to the window. He was a black gentleman. His name was Jimmy Carter. And I looked at him, and I said, Jimmy, I said, calm down, Bubba. I said, it's work. And he took a step back, and he looked at me, and he says, you're damn right it ain't going to work, and you don't need to be in the ring no more.
That's the best one I've ever heard.
Hey, if you guys don't believe it, try some marks. Guys just starting in the business, asking about kayfabe and taters and crowbar and all that. They don't know.
They don't have a clue, Jack.
They really don't know, and that pisses me off so bad, I think. Man, it makes me so damn mad. I want to say, you dumb son of a buck.
Jackie.
I hate it, boys. I'm sorry, but I can't help it. I'll protect my business till the day I die.
Jackie,
and I ain't going nowhere.
Jackie, I've been told by the indie guys, I have been told by the guys who are the independent wrestlers that they have changed the name from the Beal. You know when you Beal somebody out of the corner?
It's
a flip. Now it's a flip. You don't say Beal anymore.
What happened to the Beal?
Take the Beal out of the dictionary in pro wrestling. It's now called a flip. That's the terminology these guys use. I'm going to flip you out of the corner.
Hey, get somebody to call in here. Hey, now look. Y'all got the fabulous Jackie Fargo, often imitated and never duplicated on his phone. You better get on the phone and call right quick so I can tell you the truth. Oh, somebody give us a call here, guys. We're doing this for you guys out there. These guys are doing a heck of a good job, and you guys appreciate it out there.
Jackie, get on
the phone and call. Send me the bill.
Jackie, the other thing that the wrestling organization has changed, they have changed in the dictionary, your strut is now known as the wiggle.
By God, they're not changing my strut now. That's not going to happen. I'm not going to put I'm not going to put up with the wiggle. I'm the fabulous Fargo, often imitated, never duplicated, and do the Fargo strut.
But I'm telling you the truth. These are the indie guys. Some guys are imitating you, but they don't say, let's do the Jackie Fargo strut or the Gene Stanley strut or the Gorgeous George. They don't say that. Let's do the wiggle. That's the terminology they're using.
Gee whiz. How stupid can they be?
Now you created a monster.
Hey, are we not going to get no call-ins? Joe Sky's the only one. He called collect. Son of a buck, he called collect. We get one call, and it's the damn washed-up wrestler and call collect. Well, look, I know you guys are getting ready to get off. I really do want to say it's been a pleasure. And whatever you do, guys, keep up the good work. And this ain't the last you've heard of me, so.
Jackie, you wiggling
yes.
out?
Do what?
Are you wiggling out?
I'm wiggling right now to the bathroom because I've drank too much Budweiser. Slimeboy, me and you will fight now if you can talk about wiggling. I'm a strutter.
All right, guys, Next, we're out of time. Jackie,
let me say one more thing before we go. Thank you, guys. Thank you very much. And Steinborn, I wish we had more people in the business like you. I mean that. No, I sincerely mean it.
The check's in the mail.
Thank you guys a lot for having me on, and you'll be hearing from me again soon, and thanks for doing the show.
Thank
you,
Jackie.
Thanks, Jackie.
Okay,
thank
bye-bye.
Bobby and Jerry, we'll do this again next week. We are out of time.
All right, good
night,
deal.
Guys. Thanks, guys. All right,
good night.
Enjoyed it, guys.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, the latest news on pro wrestling and MMA, and more. GWH thanks you for your support.